You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, February 8th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dr. Marc-Elaine Derry, infectious disease doctor, director of Access Health LA, I should say Louisiana, on the state of our fight against this pandemic. Meanwhile, Senate impeachment trial tomorrow, and the Democratic leadership wants it done quick, so they refuse to call any witnesses. Meanwhile, Democrats tee up the COVID relief. Bernie versus Biden on the $15 minimum wage. It's Dem v. Dem on the means testing of COVID relief. Meanwhile, Biden administration getting high marks on COVID response as the number of vaccinations has now topped the number of new infections. South Africa, however, says that the AstraZeneca vaccination not effective with the South African strain. Meanwhile, the UK strain spreading rapidly in the US. The doctor we're speaking to today will be able to tell us more information about that. Meanwhile, the Biden administration to announce it's rejoining the UN Human Rights Council. And also reverses the Trump terrorist designation for Houthis, clearing the way for humanitarian aid in Yemen. It's not abolished, but ICE about to be severely restricted by the Biden administration. Voting starts on a historic fight to unionize Amazon's first workplace, and it is taking place in the Deep South. Rest in peace, Karen Lewis, former president of the Chicago Teachers Union, passed away today after a long struggle with brain cancer. The International Criminal Court rules it has jurisdiction over Israel's war crimes, and protests rage in Myanmar against the coup. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us on a Monday. Also joining me on this Monday, as she does every day, every weekday, I should say, Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing well.
Recovering from the Super Bowl. We will get into that more after in the second half of the show.
Oh, great.
I know you've got a lot to say about that.
Sure.
I know that you're it's been a little bit of rough road for you, but we will talk about that later, because we've got this interview with Dr. Marc-Elaine Derry. I recorded it on Friday evening, and he is one of the top epidemiologists in the country. Was intimately involved in the Ebola fight. We've had him on the program before. Everything he told me in April bore out incredibly well. Particularly in terms of the airborne nature. This is before it was really established. He was talking about what they suspected at that time. And he told me there were three things in terms of the transmittability of this: air, and air. And that has certainly borne out. Meanwhile, impeachment starts tomorrow, or I should say the impeachment trial starts tomorrow in the Senate. Here is Senator Ron Johnson, up for re-election in Wisconsin, with his theory about what happened on that day in the insurrection that took place in the Capitol.
I mean, you've been asking these questions about who knew what when, about the January 6th siege. You haven't gotten any information. Have you gotten information about the intelligence that they have now that would merit, that would warrant this kind of protection around the Capitol building?
No, our staff was briefed by some FBI briefers last week, and they got no information whatsoever. And again, this is a month later, and so this is how, by the way, this is how rumors spread. This is how conspiracy theories get spun up, by government not being straightforward and not getting information that it's aware of, that it has access to, and make that public right away. I'm for transparency, and right now there is very little transparency other than Stephen Sund's letter to Speaker Pelosi, which I truly appreciate. I wish the former Sergeant-at-Arms, I wish the current Sergeant-at-Arms would also lay out what they did, what they're aware of. I wish other people would come forward. The American public deserves to know what happened. We need this information. We need it now.
So you are not getting that information, and yet you have an impeachment trial coming up next week. You say that this is partly of the plan, a deflection. Tell me about that.
Well, again, I've always believed the Russian hoax was a diversionary operation from the corruption that was occurring within certainly the FBI and potentially some of our intelligence agencies. You have to kind of ask the question, what is this impeachment all about? We now know that 45 Republican senators believe it's unconstitutional. Is this another diversionary operation? Is this meant to deflect away from potentially what the speaker knew and when she knew it?
Only 45?
I don't know, but I'm suspicious.
Mm.
It's a false flag.
This, now, I know that we introduced this clip as Maria Bartiromo and Ron Johnson as if they were having an actual interview, but are we sure that we're not watching a playlet? Like a short one act play where Maria Bartiromo is playing the role of, or I should say that Ron Johnson playing the role of the Michael Lindell from the MyPillow guy.
It does sound
and
like him.
Maria Bartiromo is playing the part of Lou Dobbs. Is that what's going on here?
Well, they have to fill that void somehow for the programming on Fox.
So this guy has us believing that he, as a senator, cannot find out what's going on with the FBI, doesn't know why there's security around the perimeter of the Capitol, thinks that maybe this was all a false flag situation for Nancy Pelosi to cover up some, I don't know what. Is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's parroting the line that we're hearing out of the Oregon Republican state legislatures, too. This is a disease that's infected many parts of the Republican Party, not just Johnson.
Indeed. All right. Well, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Marc-Elaine Derry, one of the top epidemiologists in the country. We'll be right back after this. Hey, folks, today's program, it is sponsored in part by Freshly. Freshly, there's a great story that I've told about Freshly advertising on this show. It is a service basically where Freshly chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week, take the pressure off you. Well, the fact that they're advertising on the show now takes the pressure off of me. About a year or two ago, maybe, I don't know, I have no sense of time, but I think it was before COVID. So it was probably about 2 years ago. My mom is getting on in age. We're a little bit concerned about her, particularly at that time. And so my sisters and I wanted to make sure that she was eating properly. And we chose Freshly as a service to send her meals. However, we knew that she would not let us pay for a service. Or anything, really. She didn't want us to pay for it. And she would have been like, I don't need anything, this and that. So we told her that Freshly was advertising on the show.
No.
And that they were giving me free food to send to my mom. And my mom, she bought it. And then she, and on top of which, for months, she would say, every time we would talk, she would like, the food is so great. I am telling all my friends about this. I am so glad that they're advertising on your show because they're so, and I'd say, I have to say yes. But the long and short of it is, the food is fantastic. Enough so much so that you would send it to your mom. And then, just coincidentally, they started advertising on the show. And so now I'm not lying to my mother anymore.
That's good.
So that's good, too. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered, like I say, straight to your door. No cooking required. Your meals arrived cooked and fresh every week. You can keep them in your fridge stocked up. Ordering is super easy. You go to Freshly.com. You choose from over 30 meals. They got stuff like steak peppercorn. That's one of my mom's favorites, actually.
I have tried that steak peppercorn. Pretty good.
The food is really delicious. Yeah. Sausage baked penne. They have chicken pesto bowl. They can fit your lifestyle. They have all sorts of planned meals. They have plans like you have multiple meals or a couple meals. You can figure it out. Super easy. And now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Your meals are ready to heat. You can enjoy them in about 3 or 4 minutes it takes. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/majority. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/majority for $40 off your first two orders. That's Freshly.com/majority. $40 off your first two orders. Also, today's program, our advertiser wants me to tell you, new rear, new you. I guess that's a play on New Year. In 2021, look. This is a little bit awkward for me to do this ad every time. But
yeah, especially when we're in person together.
Yes, I know. It's a little bit easier when I'm alone and just talking into a but look, new year, make a commitment. You don't just wash your hands every time you go. Go the extra mile, wash your butt. All right? Brand new Hello Tushy 3.0. It is a modern bidet attachment. It's finally here. It's stylish, it's eco-friendly. Easy to install, super easy, and very affordable. Sometime during the whole COVID mess, Kyle tells me he got a bidet. He's like, it's changed my life. And I was like, I'll try it. I wasn't going to go full on, like, you know, bidet
installation.
Order it from Japan, that type of thing. And I got the original Tushy, the 2.0, and it was super easy to try it out. I mean, if you can put on a toilet seat cover, you can basically do this. Super easy. There's you don't need any new plumbing. You don't need any new electricity. Requires no electricity for that matter. It is super easy. It cuts your toilet paper use by 80%. And the 3.0 version doesn't just cleanse your butt, but it also cleans itself before and after it's used with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. Sanitation simple. It's got a schmutz shield, they call it. It offers easy cleaning. The knobs are naturally antimicrobial. Plus, every Hello Tushy bidet comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. You can upgrade to the new 3.0 model if you're already hooked on the original Hello Tushy. Or if you're new to the revolution, joins millions of happy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. Never worry about running out of toilet paper again. It really is. I mean, I don't want to get explicit here, but it really is. It's a great feeling. You understand why so much of the world uses bidets. Go to HelloTushy.com. I mean, you think about it, like, our toilet technology has not changed in like 70 years in this country.
No, and toilet paper is actually not a great model for it.
Nope.
It's not very hygienic at all.
Not hygienic. I don't want to get on my high horse about this.
It's
I don't want to get on my throne about this. Go to Hello
Tushy. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, Jesus.
Go to HelloTushy.com/majority. Get 10% off plus free shipping. The special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy, TUSHY.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/majority. As always, we'll put all of these links in our show notes, YouTube, podcast. And don't forget, it is your support that makes this show possible. If you want to support the show, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Your memberships make this show possible. That's where 97.3% of our revenue comes from, our members. You make it possible, and you get the you support the free show. You get the free show free of commercials. You would never hear this again, and you get the fun half. So why not? All right, we're going to take a we're going to throw now to this interview that we did just on Friday. We ready to roll that, Brendan? So I want to welcome back to the show Dr. Mark-Alain Derry. He is an infectious disease physician and epidemiologist with Access Health Louisiana, where he serves as the medical director of the infectious diseases and chief innovation officer. And of course, Access Health Louisiana, I believe, is the largest Medicaid providing clinic system in Louisiana. Dr. Derry, also a founder of the community radio station New Orleans, 102.3 FM, which I think at one point they've been in an Air America station, or pretty close, if I'm not mistaken. He is also a host of two daily podcasts about COVID, funded by federal grants from the U.S. Health Resources and Service Administration. One is called COVID Noise Filter, 10 minutes a day, and the other one is streams daily at Facebook at 5 p.m. We'll put links to those, of course, in our YouTube and podcast descriptions. Dr. Derry, welcome back to the show. So we've got a lot to catch up with. I think it's been, I can't remember exactly, a couple of months. Let's start first. And I know you have some graphics for us. But at this point, we've got three major things going on, it seems. One is, or the two biggest ones are the mutations and the vaccination. There's subsets to those things, but it's almost a race, it seems like, between getting everybody vaccinated and preventing the COVID-19 from mutating. Before we get there to those two topics, let's just go back to basic best practices and the status of where we are right in this moment, because it feels like we have plateaued in terms of the number of infections. We're on the other side of Christmas and New Year's. We got Super Bowl, obviously, right behind us, but I suspect that not as nearly in the same implications as those other holidays. So where are we in the pandemic?
Right. And also, let me just add to that, we are also going to have Mardi Gras in New Orleans. So there's going to be a little local super spreading event coming up, because Mardi Gras, I think, is 2 weeks from this coming Tuesday. So where are we? So we are through that dark winter. I think the last time we had talked, I had mentioned that there was a dark winter that was going to be coming. A lot of epidemiologists had predicted it. It was an easy prediction to make. You were going to have Thanksgiving, travel associated with that. Then, of course, Christmas and New Year's and the travel associated with that. We saw the predicted peaks, and we're now on the downside of it. So I think that with the new administration and having really, really competent and really good people on the team, I think that I would have said, prior, if we didn't have variants, I would have said that we're very likely on the downside of all this moving forward. It looks as though with the vaccinations, with a very competent coronavirus task force team on board with the Biden and Harris administration, we're likely going to be moving out of this slowly but surely. But now we have these variants. And one of the graphs that I sent, I showed you how in the UK, one of these variants, the B117, which we've seen here, they don't like us to refer to it as the UK strain or the South Africa strain or whatever, because just like we probably wouldn't want it to be called the New Orleans strain, because there is some stigma associated with it. So I usually refer to it by the number and then its place of origin. So B117 originated from the UK. We've seen that here in the US, particularly here in New Orleans, but certainly in Los Angeles as well. But on one of the graphs that I sent, you could see that it emerged out of southern England in Leeds. And within 5 to 6 weeks, it became the dominant strain. So all of those various variants, they all have collected the same mutation. They all, from an evolutionary perspective, it's really fascinating. They all emerged individually, but they all emerged and evolved into the same type of mutation, in which that spike protein, that protein that sticks off the edge of the coronavirus, it has a 20-degree rotation in the spike. And that 20-degree rotation in the spike makes it fit easier in the ACE2 receptor. So imagine like a key getting in a door, and it feels kind of sticky, and you kind of have to get it in and out to, you know, that's the wild-type virus, the one that was circulating. Imagine a key that slips right in the door, and you're able to open it up. That's what we're seeing right now. So that 20-degree rotation fits into that ACE2 receptor very easy, which allows a much better likelihood of being able to attack, infect that cell, and then transmit to other people.
Okay, and let's circle back on those mutations, because I have so many questions surrounding those. But with that said, you have set up this scenario where, and I guess there's a certain inevitability. I mean, I imagine, I don't know if there's a set algorithm, but I imagine when you get to a certain number of people around the globe during a pandemic who get infected, the odds of a mutation start to go up. And there was a certain inevitability that we would get to this point. It's just a question of what would we have done to mitigate things to get there. And so thinking about mitigation, with this new, and some of these mutations are more virulent in terms of their impact on people, and some are more infectious, and then just from a statistical standpoint could lead to more, obviously, deaths and sicknesses. Let's talk best practices. What we know now in terms of best practices, I mean, this is what also has been amazing to me, is that we're watching in real time science and knowledge develop in a huge race. And so what we know now relative to best practices is light years ahead of where it was 6 months ago, 9 months ago, whatnot. But tell us where we are. There's a couple of things that you have points that you want to make about best practices, because going forward, some people hopefully will get vaccinated sooner than later, but you know, we need to be vigilant now.
Right. So personally, I've been double masking. So everywhere I go, so this is a cloth mask that I wear. And then underneath that, I wear either a KN95, an N95, or a surgical mask, whatever I have handy for myself. I traveled yesterday. I actually tripled mask while I was traveling. So double masking, at least a minimum, a cloth mask and a KN95, or at least a good surgical mask is ideal.
Why? What does double masking do?
Well, what it does is that they, did you hear about this, the principle, the Swiss cheese principle of where you layer, you know, obviously Swiss cheese has holes in it, but if you layer multiple layers of Swiss cheese, the holes don't all line up with one another. And if you think about that in terms of the virus, that it's likely just having two layers like that will decrease the likelihood of inhalation of virus. And so that's why we're doing two masks. And I know that Dr. Fauci is recommending two masks as well. And I think that all infectious disease doctors and epidemiologists at this point are recommending two masks because of these new variants, because they're so infectious. So the second thing that the CDC is recommending, of course, is social distancing. And we'll talk about social distancing in a moment. We used to talk about 6 feet. I'm going to make an argument that we need to actually do more social distancing. The CDC replaced hand washing now with their third recommendation. It used to be masking, social distancing, hand washing. They replaced hand washing with avoid crowds, because we know that this is a almost 100% respiratory virus. And so there's been no cases of fomites, of touching something and then transmitting the virus to your face, to your mouth. So they've replaced, their third point has been replaced with avoid crowds. And the fourth point that they make now is getting vaccinated. So those are the big four recommendations. So for me, double masking, social distancing, avoiding crowds, and getting vaccinated. Now, in terms of social distancing, one of the studies that I sent you today was a study that took place. It was a case study right in South Korea, right outside of Seoul. And the index case, the person who had an infection came to a restaurant to meet somebody for lunch. And she was pre-symptomatic. It was before she actually had her symptoms. And she transmitted the virus to the person sitting across the table. But what was really fascinating was that because of the air circulation in the restaurant, she was able to transmit that virus to two other people that were downwind from her that were 15 feet and 20 feet. And the person who was at 20 feet, she was there. She was a teenager. She was there just to pick up a go order. She was there for less than 5 minutes, and she got COVID-19. The scientists went back and they genotyped each one of those viruses, and they were all the same virus. So it wasn't like she had had, you know, coronavirus just from some other exposure. So this really challenges the notion of 6 feet in 15 minutes.
Let's put up this graphic so that we can just sort of get a sense of, as you discuss it, Brendan, if you can just pop that up. And this is pretty scary. And I think people can see essentially where the first person was. They're sitting at that table in sort of the upper right hand part of the graphic. And the airflow goes down, right? I mean, that's what it was about, like the flow of the air in the building, in the restaurant.
And the way they were able to determine that was they had closed circuit TV, and they were able to go back and they had an air engineer come in here, because that's what, there's somebody called an air engineer, and they looked at the swinging of the chandeliers. And by evaluating the swinging of the chandeliers, they were able to recreate the air circulation. And those are those black arrows that you can see. And you could see that the person who they have listed as a B was just happy to be seated. And when she was talking, you could see her virus caught wind and was able to be transmitted 15 feet and then also 20 feet away. And again, she was there for less than 5 minutes. So very much challenging the idea. And ever since that I've been reporting with the Majority Report here, Sam, I've always said that this has been aerosolized organism. And this is, again, another great example of how it is an aerosolized organism.
Yeah, you have. I mean, very early on, I don't know if it was in April, I think it was, that we had you on when I think your response was air, I think it was at the time. And obviously no harm in washing your hands. And
I'm an infectious disease doctor. Of course. Right. Of course. I want everybody to wash their hands.
Right. The other thing I know that from you is that you have been looking forward to not having to shake people's hands for a long time. So and we should also say, And this is just a side note, the incidence of the flu is down, like,
it's almost non-existent.
Radically. I mean,
The WHO is giving us a interseasonal variant. In other words, it's at the level of when it's like summertime, which is almost negligible. And again, that's largely due to masking, and it's largely due to what we call respiratory etiquette.
And so, okay, so in terms of that study, do we have a sense of how fluky that is? In other words, like, is that a situation where it's just like their airflow was a certain way and it was just sort of like funneled right into this person, and that can happen, but maybe it only happens 10, 15, 20% of the time? Or, I mean, the idea being that I guess what is the lesson that we learn is that the viral load can remain dense even at far distances if it's moving at a certain rate?
Yeah, I mean, so that's a really good question. So a couple of other studies that actually since December have also surfaced that have shown, there was one also that happened in Korea as well. And the reason why these are coming out of Korea is that they actually have excellent contact tracers and they have an excellent public health system. So they're able to go in there and really put the effort into studying. Here in the U.S., unfortunately, you know, they'll be like, well, have you been exposed to somebody? Have you done something? No, no, no. And they check off all the boxes and they go, we don't know why you got it. And that's like a majority of what happens, because they're in this box of 15 minutes, 6 feet apart. But there was another study that showed an apartment building in Korea. And what they showed was that there was a family that lived on the sixth floor, and within about 5 or 6 days, families directly above them and directly below them all got coronavirus. None of the families knew each other. They were able to document, again, on closed circuit TV that the families never interacted in elevators or anything like that. So when the case contact tracers came in, they noticed there was one duct in the bathroom that linked them all together up and down. And that what they suspected was that the index case got in, took a shower, was talking, laughing, whatever, with the humidity aerosolized the virus, it got sucked into the ducts, and then it went into all sorts of different apartments, bathrooms. And so what we're learning is that this is a very transmissible virus. It is highly contagious, and we don't know about the infectious dose yet. And this is a question that you keep asking, and I promise the minute I know about it, I will get to you, because that is probably next to the variants, next to the vaccines, the infectious dose is really one of the hottest topics that's being looked at right now.
And theoretically, the infectious dose could change based upon the variant too. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's such a good point, Sam, because you may need less of an infectious dose with the variant. So either the wild type virus, the one that we are used to talking about, versus what these new viruses look like. And I would suspect that you probably need less of an infectious dose to get an infection.
Okay. So while we're on best practices, you also sent a graph that was really helpful, you know, particularly in the context of New York, but I imagine all around the country, people are, you know, concerned about taking public transport, you know, and I think there's been some graphics out there that have shown, like, you know, where the best places to stand are in the subway, and obviously multiple masks. And I would imagine moving around as much as possible, you know, in those contexts. You don't want to hang anywhere, really, right. Where there's other people. I mean, that's just the bottom line. But you can't avoid that if you're taking a taxi or some other type of, like, ride share, or driving with other people, I guess. Although, like, it's hard for me to imagine doing that with people who aren't in my pod, as it were, essentially. Right. But you have a graphic where you show the safest way to do that. If you've got to get into a car with somebody, and particularly in a taxi or a ride share, or if you are a driver of a taxi or drive, this is the way to protect yourself and your passenger. Can we pop that up? Yeah, here it is.
Absolutely. So what they did, they basically took simulated a Toyota Prius going about 50 miles an hour. And what they found was that if the driver that's in the front left side, where a driver usually sits, the best place for a passenger is to sit exactly diagonal. So to be in their rear right side, right? Which is most people, if you're picking up a cab, either pulling up to the curb or the corner, you're usually going to sit there anyway, because that's closest, you know, when you sit down, it's also you're the furthest away from the cab driver. And let's assume that we're talking about cabs here. So, and of course, the same is true for ride shares as well. But what these scientists did was they were able to measure the amount of airflow in the cabin of a car. And what they found was when the window opposite the driver, so the front right window, and the window opposite the passenger, so the rear left window, created the best amount of airflow that would occur in the cabin, and the air would finally be would be sucked out of the front right window, and it would basically create an air curtain. This is how the authors refer to it, as an air curtain between the passenger and the driver. So if you're going to be driving in a car or a cab, of course everyone's going to be masked. And this is only for two people. Of course, they're going to do other iterations of this, they said, but this was the first thing they published. But have the window opposite the driver and the window opposite the passenger be open, of course, weather permitting, because that creates the greatest amount of airflow. One of the things that they did say, which was really quite shocking, but not a surprise, is that unmasked when in a car with windows that are up, the driver and a passenger share 10% of the contents of the exhalation. So which really, you know, surprised me, and again, will leave me wearing masks for a very long time, considering that if windows are up, 10% of what leaves the mouth of a driver comes to me, and 10% of what leaves my mouth gets to a driver. So wow. It really.
That's pretty efficient, sadly. Let me ask you this. So, okay, we have to assume, and like you say, there's going to be other probably models that they use, but we have to assume that this is more or less the basic dynamic within a car, even though that this car may be shaped a little different than another. How far down do the windows need to come?
You know, they had the windows totally open. And I know that, of course, you being on the East Coast, I know it may be impractical to have all the windows. But I would, if it were me, I would probably at least try to have some, you know, maybe halfway or three quarters of a way, just to keep some circulation moving through the car.
Is having one window up here and one window back here, diagonal windows, is that better than actually having all four open?
According to them, yes. Because you're really, because what
you're creating a force field on some level.
Yes, that's exactly right. They were able to create that air curtain between the driver. So there was no transmission between the driver and the passenger. So having those opposite windows open created that circulation of air so that it ultimately exited out of that front right window.
That's fascinating and counterintuitive. I know that, like, you know, to the extent that I've taken any cars, which have not been many, to be honest, I immediately just go and I stick my head out the window. I sit across and I just, like, open up the window and I just breathe basically from out there. I imagine if you can stick your face out the window, you're also doing pretty good too, but that it gets a little bit chilly.
Your mask may blow off or what have you.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to know. So let's move. So with those elements of best practices, is there anything else that we have learned in terms of best practices before we move on to sort of the variations and whatnot? Like, I guess the idea that just being super conscious that this is a respiratory, it's delivered in terms of respiratory. So, like, anything you can do to keep yourself from being able to suck in the air from other people is basically... Those right. are your watchwords.
Probably the last best practice I would mention is stay within, not only within your family pod or your pod, but in your house. Don't have other people over at this point with these new variants. We had a tiny little pod. My wife and I, we actually broke all ties with all of the people, even though we'd all be masked and, you know. One of the things that we would do is maybe on the weekends we'd rent a large Airbnb kind of right outside of New Orleans or some in the bayou, and we'd all be masked indoors, but outdoors we would, you know, take off our masks and, you know, and kind of all still be together or whatever. And indoors we would be masked, but we're not doing any of that anymore. That was fine for the wild type virus, the original strain, but with these new variants at this point, it's not wise to be indoors with anybody that is not part of your immediate pod.
What about outside? I mean, does
we don't know yet. We don't know. I would be very cautious. I am very cautious. Back in the day, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I may not have worn a mask if I was outside with other people. Now, even when I'm outside, I wear a mask and I make sure that other people around me are wearing masks as well.
Because we just don't know. We know that the new variants are more efficient in their transmittability and sometimes in their lethality. We just don't know how much more efficient it is.
We do know. So I think let me parse what you just said. So, and I'm going to be splitting a very fine hair. We know that the B117 mutation, this is slightly technical. So they all got to B117 together. But individually, but they all finally got that mutation where there's that rotation. The UK did it the first. That's why it has the designation of B117. But they all are more contagious by 50 to 70%. So we know that. The R-naught is, I think, was like 1.5 to 2. I think it's up to 3.5 if it were just straight up just an R-naught without us doing anything differently. So there's no question that it is far more contagious. Okay. Now, you were talking about virulence. The variant that came, that emerged out of South Africa, has a mutation called E484K. So E484K, that variant is also shared with the P1 variant out of Brazil. Those that have that variant, that E484K, does a couple things. One, it deneutralizes antibodies. Okay, so it both with all the vaccines, right? It deneutralizes. So if you have natural immunization, in other words, you had COVID in the past and you have some antibodies, it deneutralizes those antibodies by up to 33%, or 33 times rather, 33 times. for vaccine immunity, it denutralizes those antibodies up to 8 times. So we know. So that's why all the major manufacturers now are all talking about booster vaccines. They all last week they all came up with the same thing. You have Moderna, Pfizer, Novavax, and Johnson & Johnson all said that they're coming up with boosters because we recognize that the South African, the one that came out of South Africa, and the one that came out of Brazil, they denutralized. But a couple more things. One, the second thing that they do is they disproportionately affect under 20-year-olds. So we may start to see the younger people being affected. And then the last thing that they do, which is particularly troublesome, is that they have higher viral loads. And when they have higher viral, people who have these mutations, those viral loads, and if you have a higher viral load, it does portend to having greater symptoms.
Okay. All right. So let me back up a little bit. So we have two, it seems like, more or less cohorts of mutations at this point. Both those cohorts are significantly more efficient in being transmitted.
Yes.
The B.1.17 has essentially doppelgangers, I guess.
Yes, that's what we're thinking about. Yes.
That have cropped up around because I would imagine there are similar circumstances and the virus is the virus and it's going to react to the context in which it's in more or less the same way. I can spill a glass of water, you know, in my living room and I can do one in my den. And if it's both downhill, they're both going to roll down essentially. And
you're basically describing natural selection. This is exactly how natural selection works.
So, and the R0, just to remind people, is a number which reflects if you have one person, how many people do they give it to? And we had gotten it down to almost like one person gives it to one person and a half or one and a quarter. And that's much better than giving it to two people or three people or four people, because that gets exponential. It's the old Breck Hare commercial. I told two friends and they told two friends. And
I always use that example.
Well, there it goes. We're both old. So, okay. So now, so that's then that variant is problematic in the sense that if I have 100 people, even if it's not more deadly, if I catch it, if I have 100 people and three times as many people, 30 people are going to catch it as opposed to 10 people, we're going to get more deaths because of it. And we're going to get more prolonged illnesses because more people are going to get infected. So that's
just the pure math. If the case fatality rate is 1.5 of 100, that's a number. 1.5 of 1,000 people, that's even a bigger number. 1.5 of 100,000 people is even a bigger number. So pure math dictates that not only are we going to see more cases, but we're going to also see more deaths as well.
And is there, because then I'll move on to the more deadly cohort, but is there also a concern that if you get the B.1.17 after X number of times that the wildfire? Is that what you call it?
Wild type.
If you get B.1.17 after so many infections of wild type, because it evolves, is there another step up? Like if enough people get B.1.17, is it possible to get B.2.34 or something?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, Dr. Fauci yesterday at least said we need to get everybody vaccinated because the more people the virus infects, the more mutations it can have. So absolutely, there's no question this virus is mutating unprecedentedly. Like if you'd asked me in April when we first started chatting, would I have expected all of these variants and for them to, you know, become more contagious? I would say it's unlikely. But what we have seen in public health practitioners like myself have been warning folks, saying, listen, if you let this thing continue circulate around the globe, that this will become problematic because this is what viruses do. And so it behooves all of us to do the best that we can do to make sure the whole globe, you know, like they say, rising tide lifts all ships, right? We need to make sure that the whole globe is protected, because if we want to protect ourselves, we need to protect everyone around us as well, so those mutations don't occur.
Is it too early for us to know why it has been mutating in this way? Is it because simply there's, you know, we don't have a lot of practice with viruses that millions of people get? And so therefore we now starting to understand that there's a algorithm here. If you get this many,
it could be, you know, I talked about COVID-22, right? COVID-22. Yeah. I was wrong. Apparently this is COVID-21. I expected at least COVID would do us a favor to give us a year off, let us rest and then get us again. But when I was talking about COVID-22, this is what I was talking about, was that my biggest fear was that we were not going to just put this to bed and then we could just move on with our lives. And when I was talking about that, what I was projecting ahead was that, hey, listen, this could be with us for a while. We haven't really done the things that we need to do to be able to stop it. And that we could see continued either mutation or, you know, there's 40,000 other viruses speculated that are living in fruit bats that can infect humans. All 40 of those are potential candidates as well.
So the Brazilian and South Africa, well, we're not going to refer to them as, but the ones that emanated out of there that are more virulent, we also know that they're more efficient in the way, and you say that they impact younger people more. What is it about? So all of these share this notion that one of the spikes just rotated 20. What is it that makes it more virulent in terms of its capacity to harm us? And why would it be, does this thing right here, is that what impacts the ability for younger people to catch it more?
No, that shift is only, it's only refers to infectivity.
Okay.
So, right. So we don't know. So calling it more virulent, it certainly appears to be more virulent. It does. We don't know. It's way too early to see why it affects a younger cohort. And it's far too early to understand why you have greater viral loads in people who have that E484K. It could be that you just need less of an infectious dose. I mean, if I were to speculate, if I were to have my arm, you know, kind of twisted, really think about it, what I would think through is that you just have more virus. They're more effective in getting into those H2 cells. Which means that that it gets into the cell, it creates more viruses. Those viruses go and circulate through the body. They're more effective in getting to cells. And so you just end up having a more effective virus that's able to do what it does more efficiently. And that could increase the viral load. And again, viral load does portend to symptom severity, which could portend to increased virulence and mortality. There's a path forward that does speculate that.
Okay, so now let's talk about the vaccinations, because I mean, at the end of the day, the answer, it's good to know those aspects of the thing, and obviously scientists are looking into it, and we're going to get more data. But at the end of the day, the answer becomes more or less the same thing, which is wear more masks, keep further away, don't get into a closed environment with people, and so vaccination. Let's start with some just basic questions, because I know there's a difference between the vaccinations. We've talked a little bit about the difference. Last time we spoke, the Pfizer and the Moderna are based on mRNA technology. The Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca are on different technologies. But broadly speaking, do we know the answer to some of these questions? And if there's a variance between the vaccinations, tell me. But can I get the vaccination? It, you know, depending on which one it is, the numbers on my ability to get sick go down dramatically. The ability for me to die, or the chances of me dying, go down dramatically. The chances of me catching it go down dramatically. What about, that part where you shook your head a little bit. Yeah, I can get it. It can be around me. It just doesn't impact me. Can I give it after I've gotten the vaccine?
I would say that yes, you can. We don't know for 100%, but again, complete speculative educated guess. What we have seen are some case studies of people who got both vaccines and then they test positive later. They're asymptomatic. They don't get sick, but they do test positive for PCR. It's probably one of these things where you can be colonized with the virus, not infected with the virus, right? So what does that mean? That means infected means that the virus gets into the cell. Colonized means it just lives outside of the cells. And you probably are going to have it for a couple days, whereas if you get infected, you'll have it for like 10 to 14 days. So the amount of virus that you have on board is significantly shortened. That's speculation. But I have a feeling that's what we're going to see. And that because you have the virus in your mouth and nose, you could very likely continue to transmit it. You're not going to transmit it to the length of time and probably to the degree if you were infected, but you could still get it, but it won't affect you. Now, remember, it's 95% efficient, right? The Moderna and the Pfizer, 95%. So that means there's, you know, 5% chance that you could still get. 95% is about as good as an odds you're going to get. So I'm happy to take them. But it's likely that you could still transmit. This is why it's important to continue to wear masks. Very important to continue to wear masks.
And so conceptually, the idea is that you, the vaccine, you're still a host for the virus, but you're just a really bad host. You don't feed your guest. You don't let them move in. You don't let them get rest. They don't replicate in the same way. They're just there hanging out at your front doorstep saying, like, you know, are you going to invite us in? We're going to hang out here. We're protected from the rain, but you're not giving us any food. You're not, you know, going to pour us a drink. That's basically what's going on there. And they hang out there. And after a couple of days, they say, you know what? Let's just go on to the next house, essentially.
Yeah.
Is that basically the concept?
It's a great analogy. Absolutely.
Okay. And so now let's talk about this. Like, so 95% effective. My understanding is that the Moderna or the Johnson, let's just compare them, because I think it got a little bit lost with the Johnson. Like, my understanding is no one died in their trial.
After like 40 days, there was like 100% protection for mortality and also a severe infection as well. But remember, all of this was by press release. So we haven't seen the studies yet. The studies we have seen have been through Moderna, Pfizer, and Novavax, all three. And nobody's talking about Novavax, and I don't understand why. It also was an Operation Warp Speed vaccine, and it also had 90% efficacy. It's also separated by two doses by 21 days, and it also has standard refrigeration. So I have a feeling that Novavax is going to be one, once it hits the market, is going to be sought after, because the Moderna and the Pfizer require, you know, certainly the Pfizer does require those sub-freezing temperatures. But the Pfizer and Moderna have 95% efficacy. Novavax has a roughly a 90% efficacy. And then the Johnson & Johnson has anywhere between a 66 to 72% efficacy. But after about a month or so, it had even a greater protection. And as far as I know, I think yesterday or the day before, Johnson & Johnson actually applied for an EUA, emergency use authorization, with the FDA for a single dose vaccine. So that's where we're at. And listen, we were looking for anything greater than 50%. And an influenza vaccine is anywhere between 50 to 60%. So 72% still is great, you know.
And people are talking about, and Johnson & Johnson's also looking into the idea of a booster shot too, right? Is that
right? Exactly, to account for the variants.
And so there are, and just to be clear, that there's two ways of looking at this vaccination. And one is, you as a person can go out. You should still protect other people because you don't want to catch it and give it to somebody else. But you as a person are, at least you should not have as much anxiety about dying. Essentially, you can go out with when we start to talk about what it means for public health, the idea of having people walking around who have a theoretically shortened period of time in which they could infect other people, less of an opportunity to infect other people, even if they come in contact with it. You know, still practicing these things. I mean, we could, it's really just a matter of, like, everybody, if we could in 2 weeks, get everybody one of those shots. It doesn't really matter which one they get at that point. If everybody had those in 2 weeks, we'd be, you know, June would be like, we'd be going concerts, right?
You're 100% correct. You're 100% correct. And I wish we had that public health infrastructure. And we've talked about in the past how the U.S. public health infrastructure is very, very poor, probably not unlike our structural infrastructure, which I think is like a D minus. Right. I would probably say the same for the public health infrastructure as well. If we did have a solid, you know, you heard about, you know, I've talked about in the past that the plan of action under the Trump administration has been inaction. And you saw that for 100% fact when the Biden-Harris administration got in. They were like, where's the vaccine plan? And they were like, we don't have a vaccine plan. Again, plan of action was always inaction. And so if there had been something that had been started in the summer, which is what they should have done because they knew that they were going to be coming out with them, then yes, what you were saying could have potentially happened. But they shifted all the responsibility onto the states. The states shifted all those responsibilities for me in Louisiana into the parishes or municipalities and then into the health departments. And all of them were underfunded. Everybody's overworked after a year or so of doing this. Where now are you going to start getting all of the supplies and the needles and you have 10 doses in Moderna. Now you have to line up 10 people or 5 or 6 doses in Pfizer. And now you have to make sure because if you crack a vial, you don't want to let them go to waste. That's liquid gold, quite frankly. So, and then if somebody doesn't show up, so it's just a lot of work that goes into it. And all of that, again, this was all known. This was all seen. We were saying you have to do something, and there was just no plan, unfortunately.
So the hard part, it seems, is the hardest part about this is having to be so surgical, forgive the pun, with getting those shots in the arm because they're so precious, because it's liquid gold. So it seems to me the sort of like blunt instrument approach to this would be, let's turn it into just liquid water. Like, let's produce so much of this that if your parish in Louisiana drops a thing or is sloppy or doesn't have the proper needles so that they can get 6 doses out of it, or the refrigerator breaks down or something like this, it sucks, but it doesn't matter. Do you have any sense, and I know this is a little bit outside your portfolio, do you have any sense of like, is this something that we could just say, here's $400 billion. Let's get this stuff produced out the door tomorrow.
That and DPA, Defense Protection Act. And I know that the COVID czar, and his name just, I think it's Jeff Zitzer. He is talking about enacting and utilizing the Defense Protection Act, something that should have been done long ago.
Defense Production Act.
Production Act. That's right. And so that, yes, there would be some, you know, notion of compelling manufacturers to create the vials, the vaccine, or the all the accoutrements that go along with it. But then, yes, that would also help Pfizer, Moderna, or what have you. But the other thing, too, is that all of the patents that go along with these, and these were all publicly funded. The whole mRNA vaccine came out of the NIH. And in one of the slides I sent you, you'd be remiss by not highlighting Dr. Kizmikia Corbey, who's with the NIH. And she's somebody who I refer to as a new American hero because she was 29 years old when she came to the NIH and started developing these mRNA vaccines against coronaviruses. Yeah, that's Dr. Corbey. She was 29 years old when she came to the NIH. She's a prodigy immunologist. And her quote there is, to be living in this moment where I have the opportunity to work on something that has eminent global importance, it's just a surreal moment for me. She's so incredibly humble. But to say that these were all vaccines that were created publicly through taxpayer dollars. And so to a certain degree, we're kind of hamstrung with the patents that go along with them. And that's certainly out of my portfolio. But
not if we institute the Defense Production Act. I mean, you know, if we really think this is a war, then we treat it like a war. And we would have no problem with getting into arguments about patents if we felt like we were being invaded on some level. I can also say in terms of that doctor, I think when I was 29, I think my big achievement was getting to the final level of the GoldenEye in Nintendo 64 game. So, but I can reevaluate some things. But all right, well, listen, this has been an incredible update for us, and I would like to reconvene in maybe about six or eight weeks if we could, and get a sense of what's going on there. Folks can check out your daily podcast called The COVID Noise Filter that they can find on any of their podcast services. They can also check out your daily stream on Facebook, 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's an hour-long show that covers, you know, some of the more, I guess, like weedy epidemiological data and a story of the day and some answers that you provide. Dr. Mark Langeri, I cannot thank you enough. I always feel at least a little more confident with what's going on. I want to say happier, but not, we haven't quite gotten there yet, but I certainly feel more confident after speaking to you. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so that's where we are in terms of COVID at this point. And like I said at the beginning of the show today, we have now reached a point, and I think many folks saw the end of the game last night. A lot of people thought mistakenly that the cardboard cutouts of fans in the stadium were actual fans, so it looked like it was really packed.
Yeah.
The worst part was after the Super Bowl, you had people running around. I imagine we're going to have, and of course, a lot of people maybe travel there, and you're going to travel back out. So,
And I think 1/3 of the audience were vaccinated healthcare workers. So the Super Bowl was less the problem, especially with all that air circulation outside. It was like you see thousands of people at parties.
Yeah.
Parties.
Yeah. So we will hopefully not see a bump from that, but we very well may. However, the good news is, you know, with everything that we just heard from the doctor, is that the number of vaccinations being distributed or injected, I guess, on a daily basis is now greater than the number of infections. So I don't know that there's necessarily a medical relevance to that, but it sounds like we're heading in the right direction. We just need...
Yeah. Feels nice.
It feels nice. And we just need a lot more vaccinations. All right, that's it for us today. If you missed any part of the show, check it out on Peacock on the Choice channel. You can find it at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. We will be back tomorrow at the start of the impeachment trial. We'll see you then. And for those of you sticking around...
Hey!
You're here.
What's
and
up?
I know everybody's waiting to head into the fun half. And this has been probably the worst day that Emma has had since coming to the Majority Report. Like that first sense, and it'll take a little time where like every day is like, oh, do I got to go into work? But today, I think you probably had that feeling of like,
I always enjoy coming to work. But
today
yes,
was a little
today bit. It's like, I still feel that my opinion is correct, but I'm questioning myself a little bit. I am.
Well, I mean, it's not you who's questioning it. It was Tom Brady. Tom Brady basically said to you what he said to everybody in his career when he was picked, like what number? Like, I don't know.
199.
In the draft, and he was
sixth round.
Benched at University of Michigan, and he was like, what, like the number six quarterback on that team or something like that? I don't know who I was. And everybody just said, you can't do it, Tom. You can't do it. And then he just comes out and he does it.
Look, I mean, he's not even human. It's really unreal all he's accomplished. I've said it, you know, he's a legend. I just think the
how do you go to over 50% of the Super Bowls?
Well, you are the quarterback of Bill Belichick. I mean, and he's now...
I mean, except for
last night. Right. Yeah. With Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, top 10 offensive line in the league.
This is just, I mean, it just goes to show you, you can be a total expert at the NFL,
but
when it comes to Tom Brady, yeah, you just can't.
Devin White,
go Pats.
And all the refs.
Go Pats. Go Pats. That's all I can say. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Before we do, just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. I just also want to say that Brady never supported Trump politically. He was friends with the guy. I mean,
yeah,
I can't. He's a robot.
I mean, that's also like, I'm almost give him a pass on that. I know they say he's a MAGA guy, but he's just kind of like a vapid person.
Yeah.
So he just like, Trump wanted to be in his orbit. So he's like, I'll wear the MAGA hat. I don't even think he cares remotely about politics.
Right. I don't think he has that. They didn't program for that. They didn't with the,
like
the factory.
Peyton Manning genuinely likes Republican politicians.
Yeah.
And so does Brett Favre. Like those guys actually. Yeah. The goats of old are not the best.
I might detect a little bit of anti-Southern bias in that classification there. The real MAGA guys are.
Elite.
Yeah. The real MAGA guys are these Southerners.
Yeah, I guess that's.
Well,
me.
I mean. The shoe fits. Anyways, folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, AM Quickie. It's available to you every morning. Get your 7 minutes of news very quickly in the morning, in the AM, if you will. AM Quickie. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Don't forget, Tuesday through Friday, the Nomiki Show. Nomiki Show.
I think that's right.
The Nomiki Show.
I'm not.
Find it at youtube.com/Nomiki Show.
Wait.
Why couldn't you call it the Nomi Show?
Well, that would make your two-syllable threshold, you know,
right,
a lot easier. But I'm not one to talk. I've been getting it wrong, I guess, for 4 years at this point.
That's exactly what happened to me, too. Like, she just let me say it the wrong way for so long.
I know.
And then, boom, I was done. You can check that out tomorrow. Of course, The Antifada, twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Matt!
Thursday on Left Reckoning, we're having Grace Blakely, author of The Corona Crash and Stolen, to talk about COVID economy, financialization, why the rich fear capital control. So big guest for us Thursday night, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
We got a lot to talk about in the fun half. CBO just came out with a score for the minimum wage. We will remind you that the head of the CBO is a former American Enterprise Institute head, I think. But the good news about that score is that even though, and people take a lot of issue with the way that the CBO scored this, even though that they scored it as actually increasing the deficit, it does in fact affect the U.S. budget, and therefore
can be passed through reconciliation. And also, you know, what Democrats can just go, it'll pay for itself.
Well, I mean,
that's what Republicans said about the tax cuts, despite the disastrous CBO score.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Of course. You don't necessarily need to. You just, I mean, everybody agrees one way or another, it's going to affect the budget of the United States. And that's all you really need at that point. But we will talk more about that in the fun half, and you can join us. Of course, the number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. That's what that sound means, that I have turned it on. And this silent sound is me turning on the IM. And so now we're taking IMs. You can IM the show at majorityapp.com
MajorityReport.com. The app is free. Majority app. You pick up the app and then you can IM us. But the app is free. And of course, we track all your information and we send it to MSDNC and they observe you and tell me what to say to you.
Yeah, after we get our talking points in the morning.
We send you the talking points directly through the app. So that's just one of our features that we have. And
transparency. You guys need to know what we're being told to say.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. We'll see you in the fun half.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fuck! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Hell on the bank. Hell on the bank. Hell on the bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them! Fuck them!
Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
To pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.